Oh, are we doing? Are we doing that?
Because this one.
Quite literally our cold open is
open the cold one.
Opening the cold ones. Yeah.
Oh fuck, we're good at this. All right.
Oh yeah. Podcast. Hell yeah. Hello and welcome to the 70% Complete Podcast. It's a show where the tangent is the topic. Today, I am your co-host, and I am joined by the host of today's festivities, Logan. Logan, how you doing?
I am doing well, I think. Yourself?
Good, good. What do you, we had the cold open, so what cold one did you open?
I have a summer shandy, currently.
Mm, the Leinenkugel's variety?
Yes, yeah.
Nice, yeah. Nice.
Naturally.
I have a 21st Amendment Hell or High Watermelon, the beer of the summer.
Of your summer or everyone's summer?
I believe it should be everyone's summer, but
okay.
I think this is probably like maybe like 3 or 4 years running now where this is the chosen both in beer of the summer. It is a crisp lager that has some watermelon flavor to it, which I am always a big fan of. It's a good time.
Do you go into summer expecting a different choice, or is this just like a standing order at this point?
My heart is open to new summer beers, but I feel like it's more of a thing of I will always sample around summer beers. Like it being out on the East Coast, there are like very, very good breweries out here. And for the most part, it's New England style IPAs, which now having drank them for 10 years, give me immense headaches. But there's always the summer flavors that are out there. Like they're always like now they're, you know, working with different they're doing like different lagers and stuff, but last year, the year before, it was Go's season. Like it was immense sour beers, and I dabbled with it. But I feel like the thing with the Hell or High Watermelon is that she's a simple 4%er, I think. Good. Oh, 4.9. She's a simple 4.9er, and is just the crushable beer. So it's gonna take some work. Oh yeah, yeah. It's a perfect grilling beer. Is kind of how I feel about it, which I also did earlier today. So,
ooh.
You know, we're fitting it all together.
And now we are gonna. I don't have a good grill segue. I tried.
That's fine. Thing. Grills, cooking. Crushing. This is a very crushable beer. And speaking of getting crushed by incredibly large creatures and scary and nightmare beasties from beyond. Mm-hmm. Today we're talking about Night Rain, the Elden Ring. What would you call this? Is it a spinoff? Is it a sequel?
we're gonna talk about that. I have lots of conflicting thoughts about this game. It is a standalone DLC is maybe how I would spiritually describe it.
Yeah, it feels, I'm sure that you will not understand this reference at all, but there was a PlayStation game a couple years back that was called Ghost of Tsushima. Are you aware of this?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that is like a samurai revenge story in feudal Japan as like a single player campaign, and then they put out a multiplayer mode like several months, so maybe a year later.
I did not know that.
Yeah, and it's just magic and shit. So it's like a 3 or 4 person team up thing, and you're defeating spectral oni, and I think you have powers. So this Night Rain feels very similar to that, where it's like building off of the original concept of the game and using assets and enemies of the core game, but it is very much like how you play it, what you're supposed to do in that game in Night Rain is similar, but from a completely different approach than how you would do it in Elden Ring.
Yeah. So kind of as like an overview, maybe Elden Ring. What are they? Would you consider them a character action game? Is that the genre?
Yeah.
Or are we just calling FromSoft a genre?
It's funny, right? Because you want Elden Ring. It's a Souls-like.
Yeah.
From the people who created Souls.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess I would say it's a, it is a, Elden Ring would be considered a punishing character RPG, I think. Obtuse, perhaps, an obtuse character RPG.
Oh, it is that, yeah.
And then yeah. Night Rain itself is like a three-player, it's a Destiny Strike, it's a Destiny Nightfall. But
yeah.
With the Elden Ring combat, but also you run as fast as the horse does.
So, yeah. So I think the real thing is that Night Rain is actually just PUBG, but
yeah.
Done in Elden Ring's combat system.
So when I was trying to find a way to... So I guess we'll take a step back just to like kind
yeah.
of
yeah.
expose the artifice here. So, myself, Logan, and our friend Nick, the composer of the theme music you had heard earlier, have been playing games together for, I mean, I've been with you guys for since 5 years now, almost 4 years, something like that. And you guys have been playing.
What? Has it been that long?
I think so. It's been 3 years. Just over 3 years.
Okay. Sure.
Because it was before my kid was born.
That can't be true. But
yeah,
it
that's
is.
True.
Okay. Fuck.
Yeah.
Just breathing heavy in the corner for a minute. Hold on.
Yeah. So we've been playing games together almost every Wednesday night since then. And then you and Nick have been doing it for even longer than that.
Yeah.
And there has been like an extreme positive amount of games that are three-player capable. However, the way that we approach these games, which I think is going to be a topic for a half hour from now, is different. So like Nick and I kind of play multiplayer games for different reasons than Logan does, which means that finding the Goldilocks multiplayer video game for us that we will come back and play every Wednesday night is quite difficult. So when I had joined up to start playing with you guys on Wednesday, we had switched to PUBG and we were playing PUBG for a while. And then... Mm-hmm. Bounced around a little bit. We did some Call of Duty for a bit. And then Helldivers came out. And we have been playing Helldivers every Wednesday for 13 months now, I think. So yeah,
that sounds right.
So Night Rain came out. And I was like, ah, yes, it's a Vidya game that is for three players. All of us have differing levels of experience with Elden Ring. Mm-hmm. And I thought this would be the time to switch over. And the way that I was going to sell it to you, if it was going to be a hard sell, is that it's just PUBG. Like it's Fortnite, but basically it's PUBG in Elden Ring. And can you elaborate a little bit on what you mean by it's PUBG, but Elden Ring?
I mean, yeah. Yes. Okay. So I guess maybe a quick overview on what you do in a Night Rain game is probably in order. You pick a class, you get dropped into a map, you kill things and take their stuff and gain points while doing so. You can then spend those points to buy stuff at various shops throughout the map or to level up. But this whole time there is a time limit, so you need to be doing things quickly. As time goes on, eventually you get the blue circle of video game fame now, which slowly pushes you to a corner or the middle of the map somewhere. You then fight a boss, rinse and repeat one more time, fight another boss, and then go to fight the third boss after that.
That big scary beastie.
Yeah. Match takes 45 minutes, give or take, if you make it all the way through.
Yeah.
Less if you die at the end of either the night one or the night two bosses. So yeah, that's kind of your like rough gameplay loop. Relative to where Elden Ring as a standalone product, I think is entirely different. And I think these games are for almost entirely different people.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny.
A lot of ways.
It's funny because I feel like Elden Ring was... So Elden Ring was my first Souls game because I saw how everyone was talking about the previous ones and said, no, thank you. That's not for me. I'm not that kind of person. And then a lot of people were playing Elden Ring and I was like, well, I do like fantasy bullshit. So I guess I'll try this out. And it worked for me pretty well. And it's funny because you look at the sales numbers for Elden Ring, which is, I think they are over 30 million at this point, units sold. And it's like, it's approaching Mario Kart 8 levels of success. Like, Elden Ring sold more than Tears of the Kingdom did, I'm pretty sure. So it's like huge, huge, huge success. And I think it's turned into this, you know, you look at what Summer Game Fest was last year, and it's this catalyst for... oh shit, there's this huge audience who wants these types of difficult kind of obtuse games. Let's put more of them out. So you start to see, you know, all of the, not also-rans, but kind of also-rans, like that Lies of P, the Pinocchio game, is just Bloodborne, but Pinocchio. Like, there are more of these games coming out because Elden Ring kind of busted open this genre just as Bloodborne had before it, and, you know, as FromSoft kind of goes. And it's funny because you kind of expect Night Rain to do something similar, and I think it's kind of doing the opposite. Like, it's not doing a, hey, you should check out FromSoft games, which I think is maybe what they perhaps wanted to happen. It has turned into more like, I am thinking about Marathon in a different way than I was before playing Elden Ring. Like, I'm thinking about Arc Raiders, I'm thinking about PUBG, I'm thinking about Fortnite in a way that is different and is perhaps more appealing than it was before playing Night Rain. And I think it's just an interesting paradigm that, you know, FromSoft kind of kicked this whole thing off with the massive, massive success of Elden Ring. And then now they're kind of, you know, reflecting that back on multiplayer games.
Yeah. So I think maybe people took the wrong lesson away from Elden Ring's popularity. This is thesis number one for today's okay. episode.
All right.
So I've been thinking about this for a couple of days now. I saw a whole bunch of people latch on to Elden Ring and get excited about the difficulty in it in a way that these people normally do not interact with difficult games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yourself, Nick, a number of other people who I will not mention had a pretty similar experience of really, really getting taken by Elden Ring. And I think the big difference here between Elden Ring and Night Rain is that Elden Ring is closer to Helldivers is maybe actually going to be my analogy. I think what grabbed people about Elden Ring is not the fact that it's really freaking hard. It's that it lets you very precisely dial in the level of difficulty that you are comfortable with and then overcome that.
Yes. Yeah. Yep.
I don't have a ton of time in Elden Ring. I have even less time in Night Ring. But from what I remember in Elden Ring, you have your player level, you have your weapon level. There are the Ashes of War. Is that what they were called?
Yes. Yeah, the Spirit
you
Ashes.
You have those. And then you can also summon in other players for like a short little co-op thing for a boss.
Yes.
Battle too.
Generally. Yep. Yeah.
Okay. So there's four different levers you can pull that don't involve practicing getting better at the game itself.
Yes. Yeah. And this is the core, incredibly core to my experience with Elden Ring, because as we will discuss, I didn't want to get better at Elden Ring. When I played Elden Ring, I specifically chose the astrologer. I chose the pew pew magic person, and I spent probably upwards of 10 to 15 hours of my entire time playing that game in differing levels of just farming souls to outlevel that game, because all I wanted to do was to see what Elden Ring was. And the game allowed me to do that. Like, I was able to summon people. Like, you end up getting one of those Spirit Ashes is just another version of you that has all of your gear and all of your spells and all of your abilities, So you can just summon yourself to also just team up on bosses. And the game allows you to do that. So I think it kind of circumvents the FromSoft difficulty conversation that comes up all the time of like, you know, they should just put difficulty options in this game, which I kind of agree with. Even though there are ways to circumvent it. Like, yes, I guess to bring it around, yes, you're completely right. There are a lot of levers to pull to where I can tweak how difficult I want this game to be. And there is almost always a path to make it easier. It just kind of is obtuse like the rest of the game and can be time consuming to get there.
Yeah, exactly. And like I've been playing Elden Ring entirely differently than that. And then we hit Night Rain where you have none of those levers exist.
Yeah. Yep.
In fact, they go the opposite direction. I think another draw with Elden Ring was the exploration factor that people got out of it.
Yep.
There's a lot of space to breathe in that game if you let it. I had some vibes of The Long Dark. I don't know if you've played that at all.
Okay. Oh yeah. Yep.
Yeah. There's you can sit within the solitude of Elden Ring and not actually accomplish anything. And have a good time doing it.
Yeah. And the game encourages that too, right? Like there are plenty of just weird, like the Jar Man. He's just out there. Like Alexander is sitting there and he's yelling. And if you hear him, like that will, you know, you'll be rewarded for your discovery and exploration just as much as you will be sitting by the ocean and just watching the waves come in.
And in Night Rain, I have barely had time to look at a skybox.
Oh yeah. Like, no.
It is on both a like literal timer in the sense that the map changes with time, but also a kind of a figurative timer where if you are not keeping pace with generating runes at the rate you need to, you're not going to finish either. So
yes.
There is not time once you are within the game to do anything other than execute on the plan that you should have already made about the game before you got into it.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is the part when we talk about the levers that you pull to tweak that difficulty. The lever that Nick and I end up pulling is that you lead the team, right? Like you have the plan and therefore we follow your plan and we go to your pin. We do what we need to because you have more time in this and you have thought of the plan, where I think both of us would kind of load it up and just fumble fuck around and end up being level 3 when we have to get in there and defeat that first boss.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, kind of to come back to the different ways we interact with Wednesday games. Yes. Or really any games. I tend to be way more of a sweat lord about it. And you two are filthy fucking casuals. Depending on the game. Not all the time.
Generally correct.
But as a broad stroke, that tends to be where it goes. Because I think we take away different things from that experience.
Yes.
Like I appreciate the process of uncovering the game, creating that plan, and then executing on it. And I think you come to that from a slightly different perspective.
Yeah. I will end up spending some time every time we play Night Rain just getting lost and also reading item descriptions. Like the mastery of the game is not where it's at for me.
Yeah. Like I think you would probably bounce off of Night Rain on your own. Yeah.
The amount of time that you have spent in this game solo is completely undesirable for me.
Yeah. Yeah. So I am now, I guess, yeah, we haven't talked about this since I beat the first Night Lord.
No, not at all.
So I beat the first Night Lord with Iron Eye, the ranged archer character, who I think is probably a little overtuned in solo queue.
Okay.
Or maybe I'm just a pretty good Iron Eye player, but I think it's probably the first one. Yeah, so I was able to beat the Night Lord after a lot of attempts. I have not played with anyone besides you and Nick, so I very intentionally avoided random queues. I also haven't attempted any of the other bosses yet either.
Interesting. Okay.
So I've only been grinding on that first one there, and I think I've beat them 10 times now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm 10 for 10 since beating it the first time with my new strategy with Iron Eye.
Okay.
I tried two runs with other back to melee characters and did not go well at all.
Didn't go great. Yeah.
No, immediately switched back to Iron Eye and hammered out another 8 wins in a row. So
yeah, I feel like this is the coming back to thesis number one. I think that this is the PUBG part. Like, I think a lot of the time that we spent playing PUBG, I think it's hard to talk about PUBG without also sounding like a crazy sweat lord about it. But
let's go.
the thing about PUBG is that the part that I was never able to get good at is understanding how to control distance and when to engage, when not to engage. And especially in something like a FromSoft game or, you know, something that I was planning to bring to this show or maybe a future one, is I'm playing Blasphemous right now, which is a 2D Metroidvania that's also kind of like Elden Ring inspired or FromSoft inspired. So it's punishing. Like, it will punish you for missing a swing or missing a parry. And it's that engagement distance of knowing when I should be hitting or, you know, when I should be backing off and what is the amount of distance I have to be free of this sword swing, or how close can I get without bumping into the enemy, or where I need to parry. And I think that this is the part that works for you with Iron Eye, is that you can manage that distance better, and it gives you more avenues to bug in and out without having to waste a lot of time trying to understand, you know, iframes for attacks. Because, you know, when each run takes 45 minutes and it takes you, you know, 40 of those minutes to get to the final boss, there's not a lot of science you can do on discovering where your engagement distances should be, so you go safer with Iron Eye, right?
To a degree, yes. Part of the Iron Eye, I think Iron Eye is a crutch in a lot of ways. This is my guess, anyway. Since I'm not as good with the melee characters, I am assuming the melee characters have a higher threshold, or a higher ceiling, rather, than Iron Eye does. Because Iron Eye, you're getting damage out at a distance, and you don't have to manage FP or mana.
Yeah.
So you are already at an advantage there when a lot of these bosses tend to stay out of melee range.
Right. Yeah.
Especially that first Night Lord is a Cerberus-looking flame dog running around, running miles per fight.
Yeah. Yeah. So I mean, that was also a pain in the ass with that guy. Was, you know, we would end up having one Iron Eye and two melee classes when it was the three of us, and I feel like you guys were hunting him down more than actually doing damage.
Yeah, correct. But yeah, managing distance is the key of all Elden Ring fights, I think.
Yeah.
A lot of games. I picked that up in the deep, dark, godless trenches of Mordhau.
Yeah, okay. We're going to hit the bell right now because I was waiting for when we were going to get time to Mordhau. 27 minutes, folks.
Okay, that took longer than I thought. Mordhau. Yeah. Mordhau.
Speaking of sweaty games, the
sweatiest game that I think I've ever played, honestly. Like, and I think that's part of the reason. I think PUBG and Mordhau are honestly the two reasons I did not get taken by Elden Ring the way the rest of the world seemed to.
Yeah, I think that, yes, I believe that that is true. I think also you do not derive the same enjoyment out of the majesty of the Elden Ring bullshit. You come for it for the game mechanics, and everything else on top of it is very nice and very beautiful flavor, but you're not going to spend the time to sit down and probably read the codices to figure out what is actually going on, right?
Probably not, unless I see something in the game that leads me to believe I'm going to have a more rewarding experience doing that than I would watching a lore video on YouTube.
Yeah. Yeah, and I, as a person who is a co-host of a lore podcast, I will never watch a fucking lore video on YouTube.
Yeah.
Not for me.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't... I think most of the rough edges in the FromSoft experience are actually just bad. And I don't think they're done intentionally. I think they're done sloppily, and people like things around them enough that we just sort of have lobbed ourselves into thinking that design through obfuscation is good.
Yeah.
As like a standing order.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's the case. And yeah, let's maybe talk about the things that piss me off about Night Rain. Because I think that'll I think so. I've now played this game for like 30 hours, give or take, of like in match time.
Yeah.
Roughly. So not an insane amount, but not an insignificant amount either.
That's enough to form an opinion.
Yeah. I want to like really preface it by I have fought one of eight Night Lords. I have not engaged with the random multiplayer experience because it's a random multiplayer experience.
Yeah. I mean, we can get into the insanity of how they set that thing up, but it's I don't know. Like, I don't think the way that you play these games is going to be worth it engaging with the random bits.
I think similar to the Destiny example you brought up, it is fine. There are a lot of people that I've seen upset that there's not voice communication in this game.
Yeah.
And then you'll get pushback from other people who say, like, hey, there's a ping system, and if you know how to play the game, then that is all you need. And that is correct. I think that's just objectively correct, that if you understand how to play the game, all you need is a ping system.
Yeah.
The game doesn't do a good job helping you understand the game.
That's true.
So lots of people feel like they need voice to communicate things that only need to be communicated because people aren't starting on the same page of what needs to happen within this 40-minute run.
Yeah, and it's because it's a scheduling thing, right? Like, I think that you could play Call of Duty without voice, you know? Like, that the objective, the controls, the how you play that game is well understood, and most people can just kind of figure it out. You start at the same knowledge level. But when you have like the myriad choices that you have when you are playing Night Rain, some amount of coordination or like level setting is worthwhile. Like specifically, like if you just join a random queue and you don't understand the ping system, let alone that you should be leveling and also finding the correct gear for the boss, and then also know that you should be gathering flasks and also to be looking for stones and also hitting the mines, like knowing the order of operations or not knowing the order of operations is going to fuck you in the end, and also is just going to ruin it for your team.
Right. I mean, it's on you to then be a follower, not a leader, as part of the problem, which we're back to like the randomized elements of multiplayer. But I think the example you gave, I think voice is far more needed in a game of search and destroy than it is in a 40-minute game of Night Rain.
Hmm.
And I don't think it's even a close comparison.
Interesting.
I mean, I have now done so my prep for night three. So nights one and two, where you're running around the open world map, collecting points and gear and killing bosses. I mean, I've done that with Iron Eye. I've done that 10 out of 10 times in a row now on that first boss. And I think that's probably bad. I think this game is more solvable than its roguelike appearance maybe leads people to believe.
Yeah, but I think that's also the Elden Ring thing, right? Like the point, and this is maybe getting to the business model of the whole thing, but I think the point of a lot of The Elden Ring stuff is that you hit your head against the wall until you understand the patterns or can circumvent them. And then you don't need to defeat the boss again because you did it. I think that is the problem, perhaps, with Nightreign, is that the game is telling you that, you know, based on its trappings, that it is not that kind of game, but it still very much is when it comes to defeating the final bosses.
Yeah. And part of the problem, and Nick expressed this frustration after night one, and this made me look at things a little differently, because I had a different experience the first time playing that than you two did, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we got to the end of that first Nightlord fight where we got just our asses handed to us pretty short order.
Yeah, it was bad news.
And I feel like both of you were like, man, this seems fucking miserable. I don't know what to do. I did the things I normally do, and it was terrible. And in normal Elden Ring, I would load a save, and I would take a second crack at this thing 90 seconds later.
Yes.
And in Nightreign, that's a 40-minute walk back.
Yes. Yep.
So therefore, like, fuck this, I'm out. It was kind of the vibe that I was feeling in the voice chat.
Don't think we were quite at fuck this, I'm out, but it was very clear that there was probably a 3-night limit on this if the game did not continue. Like, if we did not make the progress that we did in almost defeating that Night Lord the last time, I think we'd be very close to not playing Nightreign anymore.
Yeah, I agree. And I hit the end of that first night, and I was like, we can do this. I see how we can do this.
Yeah, okay. Nope.
Yeah.
Was not so, there.
Right. Yeah, I think that, like, that 40-minute walk back is I think that's kind of bad in a way. I don't know. It's definitely a mind shift that has to be made. Like, I went into that game thinking about it as Elden Ring, and after that first night I was like, "Oh, this, I have to approach this the way I learned how to get good at PUBG."
Yeah.
And I have to treat that day 3 boss as the final circle, like the top 10.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that definitely made things easier, but I think this game is in a weird place. I think it's in a really weird place. But again, I've only fought one Nightlord. Don't come at me. I'm not.
Have you seen any of the other stuff, the like randomized nature of it in your run against the original boss?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
And maybe we should cover what the random elements are a little bit. And this is where I'm curious if you would consider these things solvable on the fly or not. So there are, what, like 25 points of interest on the map, give or take?
That sounds right, yeah.
25 to 30, something like that.
Yeah.
There's like mobs kind of scattered throughout the map, and then there's points of interest where you will find concentrations of enemies, and there's a decent chance that a boss with a health bar will be at a point of interest as well.
Right, yeah.
And those are important. Killing bosses with health bars is a faster way to get points than killing mobs, just kind of as a general statement.
Yeah, and they usually, when you defeat one of them, they usually offer up more powerful weapons that have secondary perks or actual character level buffs. Like, you know, you get your flasks progressively heal health. And, you know, and other stuff like that.
Yeah. Resistances to certain damage types, or you get your roguelike elements out of that.
Yeah, it's a boss loot chest, basically.
Yeah. But so all of those points of interest are keyed to a specific location on the map. That does not change. The point of interest itself can change. There's a handful of different types that it can cycle between. Each point of interest seems to draw from 2 or 3 different like settlement types.
Okay.
So there are, let's see. I mean, there's the tunnel entrances. Those don't move. There's the castle in the middle. That doesn't move. That's always the castle. And there can be, what, 4 or 5 different enemy types at the castle.
Yeah.
There's a boss at the basement of the castle. That can be 5 or 6 different enemies. There are forts. There are great churches. Those are the like crumbling ones that are falling apart.
Yeah. Yep.
They usually hit pretty early. There are encampments. Those typically have soldiers of some kind.
Yeah.
There are ruins. Is that all of them?
I think so.
Sorcerers, towers of some kind.
Oh, yeah.
Not really interacted with much. And then the little town with the special vendor in it pops up once in a while.
Yep, yep.
I think that's basically all of them.
The Churches of America will show up as well.
Yep. So we have these set points of interest. We know each point of interest is going to be one of 2 or 3 different types, typically. And within that point of interest, we're going to roll some more randomization. We're going to decide if there's an element tied to that point of interest. So if the items there are more likely to give fire damage or poison.
Yeah.
Or if they're just more generally random. And then there will be a type of enemy at that point of interest based on the settlement type itself. So like I said, the main encampments typically have like soldier freaking dudes in them, and the ruins tend to have something more esoteric and horrible looking.
Like a worm face or a misbegotten.
Yeah. So the way I started to approach this after that first night, when I was like, okay, cool, I need to like kind of solve this game by the time we play it next week, essentially.
Correct. That was your unspoken assignment.
Yeah. I was like, oh, if we're going to keep playing this, we need to like know what we're doing so we can have fun doing the thing instead of not having fun trying to figure out what the hell the thing is.
Yes. Yep. Yep.
So I look at this and I'm like, okay, cool. I can just build this spreadsheet in my head without a ton of work. So the first thing I try to do is figure out like what is our actual end goal. In this case, it was pretty easy. It's just kill the last boss at the end.
Sure.
But I bring this up because when I first started playing PUBG, I kind of didn't have the right end goal in mind when I was trying to get better at PUBG. When I first started playing PUBG with Nick, I feel like kind of right around when it blew up originally.
Yeah.
And we were all still talking about it like it's a horror game. Because that's how we were playing it. It was like, okay, I'm going to get my stuff. And oh, I think
hunker
I saw
down.
Someone. Oh, I hope they don't see me. I'm going to go lay prone inside of this bathtub with a shotgun because the gun combat's difficult. And if he's 2 feet away, there's like at least a 20% chance I'll kill him with this shotgun.
Yep.
And then that person knows you're in there and just grenades you and you die. And your heart pounds the entire time. And it's fun.
Or scary.
Or scary. But I think it's scary in a fun way. I think it's the kind of scary that a horror movie is scary. Your actual safety is not at risk. So you get to have some vicarious fear.
Yeah.
So when I first started playing PUBG with Nick, and then once I first started doing solos, my goal was to place highly, was to get as far into the game as I could. And I thought eventually, if I just keep going as far as I can,
you'll
eventually
end up being
I'll
the
win.
Last one. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's just not, if you want to get consistent at it, that's not a good way to go about it. You might get lucky eventually, maybe, but a lot of RNG is going to have to happen and everyone around you is going to have to make a bunch of mistakes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Also, like all like these stars will have to align for that strategy to bear fruit.
Yeah, and it's not repeatable either, right? Like you can't continue to try the Outlast strategy and find continued success doing that.
Yeah, not with anything approaching consistency or regularity.
Right. Yeah.
So then I had to switch to like, okay, what actually needs to happen before the end of the game for me to have a chance at winning? Mm-hmm. And let's maximize that opportunity. And then eventually the math will work itself out and I'll win one. As long as I'm giving myself actual functional chances at winning, you can just roll the dice on that until it works.
Yeah.
Because now we're looking at like, oh, maybe I have a 20% chance of winning instead of a 0.5% chance. Like I'm willing to spend the time to hit a 20 well before a 0.5.
Yeah. Yeah.
So in PUBG, I had to start getting better at combat and start forcing combat early and kind of master that gunplay and get better at, kind of like you mentioned before, deciding when to engage, when not to engage. And you're sort of weighing all of those variables against time in PUBG.
Yeah.
And something similar happens in Night Rain. So in Night Rain, when we first started, we were focusing on churches pretty early and making sure we could have as many flasks as possible to heal with. That's bad. Don't do that.
Yeah.
Anyone out there, don't do that. If you're hitting all three churches on day one, you've already fucked up.
Yeah.
And you will not win. Anytime you spend traveling in Night Rain and not generating runes is time that is being wasted. So if you're going to travel somewhere, you need to make sure that travel time is justified.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, honestly, if you are more likely to succeed in that first boss battle, if you have the levels, then the extra flask.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. 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 Yeah. So that's a big part of it in Night Rain is just maximizing runes. So then we can start to map this out. So we have our points of interest. We know what potential enemies can spawn at each point of interest. If you are for practice and for testing purposes, I recommend sticking with a character and a loadout.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing I did in PUBG. Try to control what you can control and limit the number of variables at play as much as possible until you find a functional strategy.
Yeah.
And then you can start adding those variables back in one at a time and see how they interact with that strategy. So in PUBG, that meant like, okay, I need to have X number of first aid kits and bandages and ammo. And I want like one long range weapon, and one short range weapon with roughly Y amount of ammo and Z attachments. I had kind of like a rough loadout slash like Destiny light level as a target. And I knew if I got above that level, I had at least a chance at winning. And I think that's similar in Night Rain, where we can say, cool, I know I need, like, I think my least successful run that I have still won with in Night Rain was solo Iron Eye, level 10, plus 2 starting weapon with holy damage, and like 6 flasks, and pretty trash buffs from my other gear. Like, it was not great. And that was a really hard fight, and I barely killed him, but it was a successful run.
So okay,
that kind of becomes the floor now. If I know, okay, if I hit here and I do a pretty good job, I'll probably win. So that's now our floor.
Mm-hmm.
So now we can look at the map and say, okay, we need to essentially get, we'll just make up a number and say, I don't know, like 300,000 points.
Yeah.
We can look at the map, look at where you are, look at your current gear, your current level, and you can have a rough idea on if you can clear a point of interest or not. You should also be able to tell roughly how long it'll take you with all of that information. Does that follow?
I mean, it certainly follows. I can I can see how you get there.
Like as a methodology.
Yeah. No, it's understandable. I see where you're going.
Yeah. So like if I know if I'm level 5, or even like let's look at the tunnels underground where you can get the
level 2 stone.
Yeah, to upgrade your gear.
Yep.
You've been through those mining tunnels a couple times now. They're not terrible. There's a couple of mobs in there, and then there will be one of two bosses, either a real big troll or a smaller one with the kettle on his head. I don't remember what they're called. So I know I can kill both of those at level two without incident, and I most likely will not die.
Okay.
Level one, stuff's real sketchy at level one. Getting from level one to level two is very important, and the game gives you very easy ways to do that when they drop you in every time. Clear the first camp, now you're level two.
Yeah.
That's like standing order 100% of the time.
Yep.
So at that point, I know if I'm next to a tunnel, I can clear it. But I also know if I'm like level five, maybe I can clear it a little bit faster.
Yeah.
The tunnels are quick and they're linear mostly once you understand the layout. And like I said, there's only two bosses. They're both very approachable. Not hard. Once we look at something bigger though, some of those other points of interest where there's going to be, I don't know, big scary knights or something, or a field boss or something like that. Yeah. Suddenly that time save between level two and level five becomes huge.
Like hunting down those three flame chariots is going to be a hell of a lot easier if you're level five instead of two.
Exactly. And then the other variable there is your health and how likely you are to be one shot by making one mistake.
Yep. Yep.
So where I'm at currently, I won't take a fight if I'm going to get one shot doing it, because I'm not that good at the game. If I'm in one mistake means I die and have to walk back, I don't take that fight.
Yeah.
Because it's too easy for my estimation of how long it'll take to clear that point of interest to suddenly double or triple or worse if I die once or twice.
Right, because then also when you die, you lose a level. So now you have to go back and hoard that back before you can even be at the same fighting power you're at before.
Yeah, you either have to walk back, pick up your runes, and then either now finish the fight one level lower, or pick up your runes, walk to a site of grace, get that level back, then walk back to the enemy, and then try to finish the fight.
Yeah.
And if you die two or three times doing that, you've thrown most of a day away, essentially.
Yeah, like your run is over at that point.
Right. So there's our next tier is like figuring out which are the bosses I can fight at what levels and roughly at what gear without being at risk of being one-shotted.
Mm-hmm.
So the spreadsheet's getting bigger now, but
yes, it is.
It's still in, for me at least, it's still a thing I can mostly keep in my head.
Yeah.
I'm not putting like, you know, three decimal points of precision on these weights. I think in my mind it's more of a tier list.
Yeah, I feel like you've built the decision tree in your mind.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yep.
So now it's just a matter of making those choices quickly within the map of where I'm standing, how long is it going to take me to get to someplace, mm-hmm. and what am I going to expect to find there, and what am I going to expect to get out of it? And now we can place an expected value on that point of interest. And
yeah.
If you look at the map, you kind of do that math quickly for all of them or all of the likely ones you might go to and then make your decision from there.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I can see that.
Yeah. And once you've done that, once you have those numbers in your head-ish, day one and two become pretty easy. You just have to not make any catastrophic mistakes or get exceedingly unlucky.
Yeah. I mean, I think that very much plays out just in being the receiver of all of this knowledge, the participant in the grand scheme. Mm-hmm. Like our progress over the past 3 weeks playing this game has been significant. Like we barely could clear that first boss sometimes the first time we played. Second time, mm-hmm. we got pretty consistent, but got beat pretty bad at the second boss. And then by the third night we were playing, we were, I think every run we made it to the third boss. No we issues.
Did. Yep. And I will say doing solo runs now, with the exception of Fel Omen as a day two boss,
mm-hmm.
all of the other end of day bosses typically don't hit me anymore.
Yeah. Okay.
Or at the most don't put me to the ground anymore.
Yeah.
I'll still get hit being cheeky once in a while if I'm trying to do things faster than I should. But
yeah, sure.
For the most part, things that slaughtered me many times now don't even touch me.
Yeah.
So, yeah, once you kind of get that prep in place, if you're grinding the same Night Lord, that prep doesn't really change. That flowchart doesn't really change that much. Mm-hmm. The POIs are going to shift, and where those things are going to change. So your evaluation of it and your route is different.
But the logic remains the same.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's where I think is bad. I think that's a miss.
Yeah.
To me, that portion of the roguelike experience needs to be more randomized. Now, there are some more random elements in the gear that you find. And then like the passives on the gear that you find can push you into a couple different directions.
Yeah.
And in some ways I would kind of look at both the gear you find in the map and then the relics outside of the map. I would treat that almost like doing a Magic the Gathering draft.
Sure. Yeah. I can see that.
You're just kinda like, okay, which like slight direction is this gonna push me in?
Yeah.
But at least for Iron Eye, doesn't really matter.
No.
I'm gonna do basically the same thing every time.
Yeah. And the bit about the classes also, like maybe you're winding up to this, but by starting this game as choosing a class that has its own kind of Elden Ring skill scaling built into it, it means that taking, like, there's a little bit of flexibility there. I've seen a lot of people using the Revenant as someone who uses colossal weapons that scales with faith, but you're not crafting a build. Like you're not landing in here and having the flexibility to say Iron Eye the Ranger is now going to go sword and board because that's the good shit that I'm finding. Like you kind of have to stick with what you find for your class.
Right. I would say, and I think this is maybe my thesis about why I think this game is maybe not bad. That has baggage that people don't like when I use that word.
Mm-hmm.
Flawed. We'll go with flawed.
Sure.
Because I think a game can be bad and still be a lot of fun. I play RuneScape. Like I'm not yes. precious about my quality judgments. So we'll say flawed. You can run Iron Eye Sword and Board. He's got decent dex scaling. But there's not a reason to do that. The random gear you're getting isn't going to make you go, oh, I will be a more effective player in this match by switching to a melee strategy with Iron Eye because I got X, Y, and Z early in the run. That will never happen.
Yep.
You can force those builds as a way to extend the fun you're having with this game. But I don't, so far, again, I've only fought one Night Lord. This could absolutely change. But so far, at least, I don't see a functional reason to make those kinds of decisions.
And I mean, Elden Ring did have those moments, depending on how you played it. I don't remember her name. Raya Luna. Who knows? Magic school lady who runs the magic school.
Yep.
As a mage, you cannot damage her, basically. Like in the moon phase, I was hitting her with Glintstone and it was doing fuck all. So I had to drop a couple of points and I actually did go sword and board as my puny little mage in order to take her down. And that, as far as I know, doesn't, like, going against build or, you know, that's not how Night Rain is built. Like, it's not built in a way to force you into doing something that is counter to what your character can do or is, like, you know, skilled at.
No. And part of that is, I think, the randomization elements are, with the exception of the enemies and the points of interest, I guess. So the relic randomization and the weapon buff randomization is, I think, too random.
Yeah.
The relics especially, I have to be well over 200 relics now. And oh, I would say, I would say no more than 5% of those have been useful currently.
Yeah.
And none of the ones I have currently will be useful long term.
Yeah.
But the 5% that were useful were deeply impactful as a new player.
Yeah. Yeah.
Incredibly meaningful.
I mean, I think that holy damage starting weapon is one of those relics, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is a huge, huge boon for that first boss that is weak to holy damage.
Yeah. I can kill that thing with holy damage at level 10 pretty consistently. I think I probably have to be closer to level 12 without it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is like, I don't know, 115,000 runes or something. Like, it's not an insignificant difference. That's like two or three enemies with health bar kills difference.
Big old field bosses. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like multiple minutes of better prep. So I think, I think that was another frustration Nick brought up that I've seen echoed online as well. Of just like, it feels like you want me to be doing builds, but you are not giving me the tools to actually be doing builds.
Yeah.
On any regular basis. So I think there's some opportunity there. That also makes the rogue elements feel bad. If the outside of game knowledge, the persistent progress that you're supposed to be making is obtaining these relics, but they have what, four colors, five different colors they can be?
Yeah.
Red, four. Yellow, green, blue. Red, yellow, green,
orange.
Blue. Four. Or yeah. So you need, and they can have up to three slots that have abilities.
Yep.
And then those abilities, there's probably a couple hundred, I would think.
Yeah, it's everything from like you gain FP faster, or class specific ones, or this gives you like it. You start the game with this particular item, or your weapon is now doing fire damage, or it changes this skill to be this other skill. Like it's not just a percentage up or down of something. It like really runs the gamut. It's like literally all the things that could be attached to a weapon is now possible as a drop in the relics.
And then there's things like you have, you know, 12% better attack with twin blades.
Yes.
But they don't give you any reliable way to obtain a twin blade.
Correct.
Currently. So now you have a relic slot that's being taken up by a thing that is maybe relevant one out of every 12 games or something. Even if it's one out of five, you're never gonna use that unless you don't have any other options.
Yeah.
So I think the complete lack of agency you have there is another miss. That the way that system is right now, you can do 30 runs and make no functional progress with the relics you've gotten.
Yeah.
Especially if you've decided that you are going to play one character.
Yeah, because also maybe a thing we didn't mention with the relics is that a character is keyed to typically has one of one color and then two slots of another color. And there are like, unless, I think until you beat the first boss, there is no additional way to roll another color into that loadout.
Correct. So, like I was playing Executor early on, and their relics are red, yellow, yellow. And I got a blue relic that did holy damage, and we needed holy damage to kill that first boss, which is how I ended up playing Iron Eye. Maybe it was green. I don't know. Either way, I got the exact thing I needed to progress further in the game.
Yeah, and you couldn't use
it. But I couldn't use it. Couldn't
equip
it. So I had to learn a different character in order to equip it. Which, if that's the way they want people to play it, that's fine. But again, I think you're going to narrowing the number of people you can appeal to at that point then.
Yeah, or not even having like a top end way to get out of that, like relic crafting of some variety, like trash this relic, give me the perk, or even like give me a 50-50 shot of getting this perk or a diminished version of it and let me build my own.
Oh yeah, that's the other thing, is all of those perks, all those buffs also have a value attached to them. So you might get the thing you want, and it might just be a shitty version of the thing you want, which is still useless.
Yep.
You might get a +1 dexterity instead of a +3. And that's a, you know, very substantial difference.
Yes.
So I think that's rough. If they want it to have the legs that I think they want this game to have. The big difference that I see with PUBG and this during the, I'm just going to call it the prep phase, before the final serve, or night three, there is no comeback mechanic that I've found so far.
What do
you
mean?
PUBG. So in PUBG, like I said, I kind of have like a rough, here's the bar I want to get over for gear. I want to clear this threshold of gear, and if I'm over that threshold, then I think I'll have an okay chance of winning if things go well for me.
Mm-hmm. Is this the crate? Do you wish that there
like
was
the
a crate?
Crates. I wish there was a crate. Yep. There needs to be a crate. If you get a rough map or a rough start and you make a mistake or two and you fall behind in prep, there's not a good risk-reward mechanic to catch up.
Yep.
So in PUBG, you can go to higher traffic areas. You can go to the military base. You can chase down the crates that get airdropped from the sky that are full of really good gear where you know other people are going to be, but you also know, like, hey, I'm behind. So in order to make this run of this game viable, I need to be more aggressive.
Yep.
And I don't currently see that existing in Night Rain in a place that is functional. And what I mean by that is, you can, if we go back to our decision tree spreadsheet before, you can change those weightings in your head on the fly. You can say, okay, well, I think this boss will be really hard to kill, and I don't think I have time for it, but I'm going to go try it. You're probably not going to kill it almost ever, because there's not like the only version of getting lucky in Night Rain is I made all my dodges.
Right.
And I was able to whittle the boss down over time and eventually died. But the problem is the overtime portion. And even then, you're not catching up on runes a ton, typically.
Yeah.
I mean, you will a bit, but you're not gonna get multiple minutes back, and you're probably gonna spend multiple minutes that you wouldn't have spent trying to get that back, because your damage output is lower, because you've fallen behind on prep, so killing a harder boss is gonna be harder. Because the numbers are worse. And if you can do that, you probably weren't actually behind on prep. Because if you can kill that thing with lower stats, you can probably just go kill the thing at the end anyway.
Yeah.
That's where I think there's not space. I think if you have the skill level to play catch up, you probably don't need to play catch up.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I guess to take the crate example a little bit further, like, I think even when the three of us were playing PUBG, like, that is also, like, when you end up on a crate that has not been picked over somehow, nobody has found it, and one of us gets the level 3 body armor and the P90, like, that is still not a surefire way to get success if you're not skilled at using that thing. So, I mean, I don't really know what a crate in Elden Ring, or like what the equivalent would be, I guess.
I think it's maybe getting the stone keys, popping open one of the prisons, killing a guy, and then taking the extra 20,000 runes at the end as a reward.
Because
you can fire through those guys pretty quick. Although, like, most of the ones we've fought have had, I don't know, something in it that's like 2 to 2.5 times the size of a man in them.
Oh yeah.
And we run it down in like a minute or two, or like 12 seconds if all three of us are there in its late game.
Yeah.
I popped one open earlier today, and a goddamn dragon the size of the world popped out of it like 4 feet in front of me, which I then killed and got yellow gear out of it. But most of those things to me have been like, if you're already good at winning, these will allow you to win harder.
Yeah.
In a way that you're already over the bar. So being extra over the bar isn't really a functional solution for anything.
Yeah, like it is the. I don't even know what it would be. Like if there's like a random chance for you to find 50,000 runes or something. Like is that. I don't know what else it would be. That would be the thing that would allow you to like spend all of that time and effort trying to find a thing that will gamble you to be caught up with what you had missed out on.
Possibly. I guess maybe this is where maybe hitting those is kind of the lever that you can pull to. Like if we're learning a new Night Lord, maybe you can hit those every time and try to get to level 14 instead of level 12 and make that run slightly easier.
More survivable.
Yeah, but I feel like you just learn the boss at that point.
Yeah.
Instead of trying to squeak out these tight percentage points in the randomized prep portion. Cause like sometimes you'll get a map that's just bad for the boss you're gonna kill at the end. So like that first Night Lord is weak to holy damage. Picking that Night Lord and dropping into the map, there is no guarantee that there will be a holy damage themed point of interest.
Hmm.
So now you're either hoping you get a random drop, hoping there's something in one of the shops, or you're going to have to over-level to account for not having that weakness available to you.
Yeah.
Or you crash the game and start over. Which, if we didn't mention, I don't think we did. There's no way to quit a game.
Yeah.
You can return to the title screen, reload, load back into the hub world, and then launch a new game. But there's no, like, oh, I've spent 20 minutes on this, and I can tell I'm going to lose, so I would like to not spend the next 20 minutes losing. That's not an option.
Yeah.
I think that was maybe implemented originally to keep people from quitting their three-player mode, but it not being an option in solo play, it doesn't make any sense to me at all.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's just that good old crumb sauce, you know.
Right. That's the part that I think that's bad.
That's the
I don't
bad
think
part.
That's
yeah.
Yeah. I don't think that's charming. I think that's a mistake.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah. So I don't know. I think maybe part of the problem is I think this is probably designed as a pretty good game that if you like the Elden Ring combat and you also like a PUBG-like game, you will have fun playing through this. But I don't think this is going to be this is the only game I play for the next 18 months scenario.
Yeah. Yeah, like this is not a Helldivers.
No. But it has the trappings of it, and I think that's going to lead people to some wrong conclusions. It did for me, certainly. Like I assumed, "Oh, you have all these randomized elements. You have these roguelike elements where I'm making consistent progress even when I lose with these relics. This is and they'll add BAPs, they'll add this, they'll do these other things. This will be a thing that will have legs until I never want to touch it again. But there will always be like a slightly different experience I can get out of this. And I'm not sure that's the case. I think maybe you just play this like you would an Elden Ring of just like, I'm going to experience the game and then I'm going to put it down.
Yeah. And I mean, the thing that is kind of frustrating about that in general is that you're right. It has the trappings of those things. And if they wanted to, they want to roll out new maps, you know, that they do the PUBG thing. Here's now you can go to the underground and that's the new map. And that has, you know, a new set of bosses that are attached to it. Like you can see them adding stuff into it, but it turns into, you're not talking about PUBG anymore. You're talking about something like No Man's Sky, right? Like you can next update, that's the relic crafting update. You know, next update, we're putting out like two more character classes that interact with a thing differently, like incentivizing you to do that. Like you're getting like this more like the Destiny or No Man's Sky model where they're adding functionality to the game to tweak how you play with it, but nothing in what FromSoft has done in the past and kind of what I've seen of Night Rain would lead me to believe that that is a thing that they're interested or capable of doing.
Yeah, no, this is, I mean, I have seen people call this game an asset flip, which I think is a little uncharitable, but yeah. I also can't entirely disagree with that concept either. This feels to me like a game jam that they technically finished, but never like fleshed out the design.
Yeah, I mean, like, this is a really good mod.
Yeah, it feels like a really kick-ass mod. Yeah. I don't know. It feels another, like, the design just isn't coherent to me. I'm not sure who exactly this is for. I don't think, like, the casual players they picked up with Elden Ring are going to bounce off of this.
Yep.
And I think the true Sweatlords are going to just entirely solve this thing within the first month.
Yeah.
And then you'll get a period of time where people are doing like weird self-imposed challenges like we see with Elden Ring or
yep.
any of the dumb stuff with RuneScape. But I think that'll fizzle out after not too long either, because there's not like, yeah. Since they don't let you cycle through the maps to change those randomizations on the fly, you can't just like crash and reload. So speedrunning is going to be fraught.
Yeah.
There's not a way to make the prep go that much faster.
Yeah. Like there also isn't a way to just skip that prep phase.
Right.
Like even if you wanted to do a
right.
level one naked run, you still have to wait.
You just have to sit there for 40 minutes. Yeah. So yeah, this feels like it has all of the aesthetics of a randomized thing that will feel different every time, that will become your new Wednesday game for the next 18 months, but it has like none of the design philosophy to support that.
Yeah, and I mean, even like it has the aesthetics, I feel like it even has like the component parts to be that. It's just missing it's kind of missing the scummy Fortnite way of doing it, where like there is no, you know, I guess we can kind of get into the weird business of it, but there's no incentive for them to increase the amount of time you are playing Night Rain. You know, like there's no war bond to grind, there's no battle pass to get, there's no quests in a way that will, you know, increase your character level to do something else. Like the fundamental thing that you do in Night Rain is you do one night, two night, and then the third night boss, and then it bounces you back to the round table hold where you get your loot drops, and then you pick another expedition and you go again until you have defeated it and decided that you have stopped. Like there is no reason for FromSoft to incentivize you sticking around longer and longer. So why, you know, they have the trappings of it, but why would they ever make a game that is eminently replayable when, you know, you gave them your $40? Like that's it. Like they got what they needed.
Right. And there are some things in there we haven't touched on with like the remembrance quests. They've added some like kind of old school vibe in a way, objectives that will extend your playtime arbitrarily, but I mean, yeah, the skins are expensive, I guess there's that. There are things that if you want an external reason to grind things out, it exists, but there's not like a functional reason to grind those things out.
Yeah like you are not becoming a like measurably significantly better Night Rain player by playing the game longer. You're simply getting good at the game, and then once you get good at the game, you can finish the game.
Yeah, and once you get good at the game, the rest of the game just rewards you for being good at the game.
Yeah.
There's not a next, there's not a thing after that.
Yeah, and without the, I mean, kind of to layer this back into the PUBG conversation, like without a without another player that you are playing against, there is also no like random human aspect of this.
Correct.
You know, like you get good at the game, you defeat the boss, and then you continue to be good at it, and no one is going to force you to try a different strategy. Like, you have beat the first Night Lord 10 times with the same character, and there is no incentive for you to go back as the Duchess and try to do that all over again.
Not particularly.
Yeah,
the remembrance quests are kind of it, and even those are going to be sporadic in what they're having you do.
Yeah.
But that those also, like, you kind of there's like another weird layer of this that I've seen from lurking in the various subreddits. Like, people doing those remembrance quests are now no longer there to kill the Night Lord. They're there to do some other objective within the game. Which, when you have a randomized team, people who all need to be doing the same thing, you've now split the party from an objective standpoint. You have one person who is trying to go do their own thing that will not help the other two people, and in fact may hinder their progress.
Yep.
So that gets weird. Queuing gets weird. And then the other weird hurdle, since there were all these difficulty levers to pull in Elden Ring, and they had such a wide player base, imagine someone like you queuing in multiplayer randomly. Someone might carry you through that first night pretty easily. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now what? Now what do you do?
Yeah, that's, I just in queue a lot up of for ways, the next one.
Yeah, and in a lot of ways, that first Night Lord is supposed to be a bit of a skill check. That's why the game opens up considerably after you clear that first boss. There are mechanics that do not exist until that first boss is gone. The world events do not exist until that first boss is gone.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you haven't seen Shifting Earth or anything like that yet.
No, nope.
So yeah, the map changes randomly on like a the whole top center chunk of the map where those two mine entrances are butted up against each other.
Yeah.
Like, that turned into a big hollowed out volcanic crater system full of flame enemies for a day or two.
Yeah.
And then it turns off and it goes back to normal. And then they'll shift little portions of the map like that. So there, and like the relic colors being able to change, that all happens after the first boss. You can immediately pick from six of the other bosses after you clear that first one. So a lot of the game opens up after that. That is a check to make sure you are in the skill group required to keep going and not ruin everyone else's day.
Yeah. And all, like, skill level as in like capability of using parries and dodges and stuff, but also to get back to your spreadsheet analogy, like, in order to be successful at this game, you kind of need to be able to parse the game in that kind of way. And if you are carried through that first Night Lord and you are now hit with six additional ones and you do not have those skills, it's just going to be a bad time.
Exactly. And that's where we get this like ping argument versus voice chat.
Yep.
Where if you clear that first Night Lord yourself, or as a group yourselves, you should have the game knowledge required to then go to the next thing. There's an amount of scaffolding that's happening there.
Yeah.
So early on, like very early on, like launch day, day after, maybe day three. What that meant was if you were going after one of the other Night Lords, you are now in a queue with only people who have also beaten the thing on their own the first time.
Yep.
So it's been interesting to see the perceived average skill level of a player queuing for boss three, for instance. On, you know, day one, two, and three, those were all of your FromSoft perverts.
Yep.
Doing that. And now we're getting just anybody who got carried through night one
or
through boss one is now in those queues. So it sounds like it's made random queuing less reliable than it was in the past.
Yeah.
Which means if you are one of the people who is already good, you are now frustrated that you're trying to do a thing towards the end of your skill limit and you cannot get people to support you. And if you're someone who did get carried, people can't carry you through the later stuff because you need to suck less now because the margins are thinner and yeah. now no one's having a good time.
Yeah. And now, now you run into the difference between like, to bring it back to the Destiny, like that first boss is the first really difficult Nightfall strike that you do. The next bosses are just full on raid territory now. Like you need to be like ready to go. You need to know where you got to dunk the orb. You have to like have your meta figured out in order to kind of progress.
So yeah, I don't know, man. I am having fun with it. I'm going to keep playing it. I don't want to lose sight of that either. But I don't know if this game is what anyone wanted it to be or thought it would be exactly. And I think it's like 40% of the game that a bunch of disparate groups wanted it to be.
Yeah. I mean, it's super funny because when I heard about this game, it was an immediate, no thank you, not for me. Uninterested, even knew that it was like a three-person multiplayer deal. Like, it just, not for me. Like, I knew that this was not going to be a game that was going to stick with me. And then, you know, I heard some buzz about it and kind of heard how it was a bit of a mixed bag. And then talked you guys into playing it. And now, like, yeah, I am having fun playing this game. I kind of, like I said earlier, if the skill ceiling continues to go up and we do not see good progress, I think this is going to go directly into the dustbin because I just don't have it in me to bang my head up against something, especially when I have to wait, you know, 5 to 7 days to give it another shot, another two shots, and then see what happens.
Yeah. Yeah, this is a bad Wednesday game for all of the reasons that Helldivers is a good Wednesday game.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
Despite them having similar patterns of play on the surface.
Yeah.
Like a PvE run-based thing with some perpetual elements.
Yes. Yeah, like I think there are other Souls-like games that I will probably try to talk you guys into playing now that it seems like this has at least been somewhat successful. But I do want to hit you with a little bit of more recent news vis-a-vis FromSoft and multiplayer games, because I know that you don't pay attention to shit.
I don't pay attention to anything.
Did you know the Nintendo Switch 2 came out?
I was aware of that.
Okay. Were you aware that From Software has an exclusive Nintendo Switch 2 game that's coming out later?
I was not aware of that, I don't think.
Okay. No. It is a multiplayer game. It seems
I'm already out. You've put the two companies I like maybe trust least.
Yep.
to do that in the same room. Like
yeah. Yep. Yeah. So it's okay. It seems like it's another class-based multiplayer thing set in a legally distinct version of the Bloodborne universe. Which I only bring up because when we're talking about Nightreign and kind of who is it for, what is its purpose, and kind of talking about the nature of it possibly being an asset flip, which I agree with you. I think that's a little disingenuous. Like I see how you get there, but
yeah,
you know, it's more
than
that.
I think it's intentionally rude, but it also strikes at something that isn't entirely false either.
Yeah. So, kind of galaxy braining it, this is the first time that FromSoft has done a synchronous multiplayer game in this kind of way. I think the only other thing I can think of is Chrome Hounds, but that was ages ago.
Is Armored? Is there anything in Armored Core? Isn't that them now?
I thought that there was PvP in there, but I don't actually.
I mean, there's PvP in Elden Ring also.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's not this like squad based,
right?
Kind of larger general goal. But I think I'm curious because you don't kind of do something out of left field like this unless it's a good idea and the team is really behind it, and also maybe you get something out of it. And I'm curious how much of this is informing this new game called the Dusk Bloods, because it seems like this is a really good testbed. Like, it is a enjoyable game. I'm having fun with it, and I suspect that this is going to be a step one for them to do the step two of whatever the Dusk Bloods end up being.
Oh, I would believe that. Like this, like I said, this is built like a game jam in my mind. Of just like, here's a weekend. We're going to put all of you in this room with pizza, and we're going to padlock the door. And when you come out, there will be a multiplayer game.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, that's how it feels like this got made. And then they just like polished up the technical bits without really considering the design further. But yeah, this feels like a thing that they made in house that maybe shouldn't have been released. I don't know.
Yeah, or like, back to your idea of it as DLC.
It could have been $30.
You know?
If this was like a $30 standalone DLC for Elden Ring, I would feel better about it.
Yeah, it is funny because it has, it really has the energy of, we're adding a Battle Royale mode to Halo Infinite. Like, it's real, like, hey, we're doing something completely different now.
Yep.
Yeah, it's still good. I enjoy playing it. I imagine that we will have less than 6 weeks more of playing Night Rain before we go back to maybe Helldivers or something else. I can't imagine. Like, if we are taking 3 weeks to get through that first boss, I really don't know if it's going to take us an additional 3 weeks to get through each of the other ones, or significantly more.
Yeah, I don't know. And I've intentionally not touched them yet, because like, I try to be somewhat aware of the way I get with these games, where I just grind them into the dirt and bring every last ounce of dopamine I can find out of them in like the first 9 hours. And then you guys are like, oh, are we doing that again? I haven't thought about that since the moment I hit the X on it last week. And I'm like, this is the only thing that's filled my mind for the last 128 hours is how to beat this fucking thing. I try to not speedrun them too bad, but
yeah. Yeah, back to the whole like conversation about how we approach these games and everything. Like, I think that you're not really exaggerating. Like, when you say the last 128 hours, this is the only thing you have thought of. Yeah. That is correct. Like, you have played three games in the last 18 months?
Probably something like that.
Right?
Less than 10, for sure.
Yeah, definitely less than 10.
Definitely less than 10. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that has been the funny thing about having a video game podcast is like, hey, like, everyone else is doing Game of the Year stuff. Like, let's get together. And your Game of the Year is Helldivers and also RuneScape every year.
Hey, I replayed both Total War Rome 1 and 2 and Empire Total War. Probably some other things. Mordhau. Got back into Mordhau for a while. Still might go back to that after we're done with Night Rain.
Dangerous.
I need to drag you into Mordhau, I think.
I would love to see Mordhau.
I wonder if we can... Nick has it, but he bounced off of it immediately, which was almost entirely my fault, I think, in a lot of ways. That was like the first PC game I think he picked up after getting a gaming computer.
You gave him the sword is controlled by mouse movement
video
as his first foray into it.
Look, there are a lot of things on paper that make Mordhau very appealing to a Nick-like person.
Sure, sure.
And I forgot about all of the other bits around it.
all the parts that you like.
Yeah, so I think Mordhau is actually, like, as a case study, I think that's the inverse Wednesday game of what we normally get.
Yes,
where typically I think we need to find something that you and Nick have fun with, but also has a skill ceiling in some direction that I can chew on for a while.
Yes, absolutely.
And I think Mordhau is like the inversion of our normal Wednesday game, where it is like mostly skill ceiling, but also there are ways you can have fun if you choose to.
Yeah, yeah. But also it seems like unless you're really good at playing the loot, the skill ceiling is also going to get in your way anyways.
It's omnipresent, I would say. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, maybe Mordhau will be our next peek into the, like, how do you learn how to, if you decide you want to get better at a game, how do you approach that?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that that's a good thing, because part of this entire discussion, like the catalyst behind it, is that you and I do play games incredibly differently. And I mostly, and by we play games, I play games, you think about them.
Yep.
I mostly sit down and say, what do the buttons do? And then I will go to the next person who will tell me a piece of dialogue or a story. And I will bump that difficulty down to baby mode just so I can shoot a thing in a face and continue moving forward. You, however, have spreadsheets in the brain, which is,
Yeah, man. There's a reason I've never installed EVE or Dwarf Fortress or Factorio.
That would be
I know.
Bad.
I know what'll happen. Yeah, yep. I need to, like, keep my job and shit like that. So, and, yeah, don't want Catherine to leave me. So, you know, there's, like, there's
because
reasons
of Factorio.
I don't. Yeah, there's reasons I don't install those games.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so I think this is kind of like the other side of the coin for the, like, the Codex origins of this show, because, like, Codex is 1000% the only thing I do in video games. Like, I am only looking for the Codex shit, and then sometimes I'll try to get good at something, and I feel like you are the opposite of that. Like, the Codex part is the fun part, but the actual thing that you're here for and the thing that drives you forward is the game and how it works and how you can kind of dissect it.
Yeah. The same reason you don't watch a YouTube lore video is the same reason I haven't jumped into any multiplayer in Night Rain or watched a single person do a run or anything like that. Like, that would spoil the story for me, essentially, for lack of a better descriptor.
I love that.
Which is why RuneScape is the perpetual Codex game, because it does all of those things for both of us, I think.
Yes. Yep.
There is a bottomless pit of both in-game lore that you can discover and think about all day, as well as, like, planning and other bullshit that you can
mechanics you dive can optimize
deeply into. Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, we'll see. I'm going to keep playing Night Rain. It's good. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's fun.
It's fun.
If you like the combat of Elden Ring and either want to solve this puzzle of prep work or want to take the solving that other people have done and just run through the game and spend more time doing Elden Ring combat, and that's worth $40 to you, then I think it's a good time.
Yeah.
If you have played 4,000 hours of Elden Ring and you have run out of external reasons to keep playing Elden Ring and you think this is going to do that for you, I think it will do that for maybe another couple hundred hours.
Yeah.
And then you will have run the well dry at that point.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, despite what it looks like on the outside.
This being the same price as Shadow of the Erdtree is a real decide which kind of Elden Ring player you are, I think. Like, do you want more of that Elden Ring goodness with, like, a new skill tree and a new location? Get Shadow of the Erdtree. Do you want to just run around and do that combat over and over again and get stupid good at it? Then, here, do Night Rain. I think that is generally the split.
Yeah, it's an optimization simulator with a Elden Ring combat.
Yep. Yeah. Still good.
And then you'll know from those words, you'll immediately know if that's a thing you want to engage with or not.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. If that is your language, you tuned out of this an hour ago and have already started playing it.
Yeah.
Well, that's Night Rain, and mostly a little peek into how Logan's brain works when associated with these things. I think it's fascinating just because this feels like the Helldivers episode part two of, hey, I like the way this game looks and all of the fun, dumb stories behind it. And then the second half was just you saying, well, let me tell you about some numbers.
Yeah. Watch. Just, you ready for this madness? Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let me explain spreadsheets to you through the medium of audio.
Yeah. I hope that the numbers on this game get out in a way that has stupid things like the fleshy bit of the charger doesn't have any additional damage done if you shoot it.
Yeah, we might have to. We should probably do a second parter on the mechanics of that game and where that game's gone. I don't even think we would have played Night Rain at all if it didn't coincide with a narrative arc closing in Helldivers.
Yep. Yeah. With Super Earth being saved, it just felt like we were going directly back to the normal Helldivers, and it felt like a good moment to take a break.
Yeah. So tune in later for probably a part two in the Helldivers saga.
Helldivers 2 or 2.
Whatever part we're on now. Yeah. I don't know. Are there other weird dense mechanical games? If we want to talk about those, let me know. I will decipher them and ruin Phil's day.
Perfect.
Explaining it.
send those into the Discord or the email or the hit me up on Blue Sky. I would like to hear about the horrible game that you have sunk your life into and then mostly make Logan play it for 40 hours and tell me how it works.
Do you know about rats dying of alcohol poisoning in Dwarf Fortress?
No.
Perfect.
No.
We'll just let that thread fucking dangle. Oh, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Put a pin in that one on the later episode topic.
Yep. Add it to the OneNote. Well, we're now pitching other episodes, so I think that's the end of this one. thanks for listening to the 70% complete podcast.
We'll get to the other 30% eventually.
Yeah, we'll get. It's all about finding the correct path and optimizing our way to 100%. If you like the show, share it with a friend. You could leave us a review if you want to, but share it with a friend. If for some reason this madness makes sense to you or is something that is engaging or fun, let us know. You can do that by hitting me up on Blue Sky. You can send an email into the show. The address is hey@70percentcomplete.com. Or as mentioned in the previous episode, join the Discord, hang out with us. We're palling around, chit-chatting stuff. I think the most recent conversation was also about Night Rain, actually, now that I think about it. So join up and give us a chat there. That's it. Go to the website, 70percentcomplete.com.
You just posted something.
Yeah, I did. I just posted stuff. I'm also working on a video about Avowed that has me reading Foucault. So that's going to be fun. Hang around for that. But until next time, thank you for listening to the show. And we'll see you in 2 weeks with some other random bullshit. Who knows?
Yeah.
Bye.
Yeah. Bye.